Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Long Way to a Small, Angry Planet by Becky Chambers. Narrated by Rachel DeLude. From the ground we stand, from our ships we live, by the stars we hope. Exodus Proverb. Day 128, GC, Standard 306. Transit. As she woke up in the pod, she remembered three things. First, she was traveling through open space. Second, she was about to start a new job, one she could not screw up. Third, she had bribed a government official into giving her a new identity file. None of this information was new, but it wasn't pleasant to wake up to. She wasn't supposed to be awake yet, not for another day at least. But that was what you got for booking cheap transport. Cheap transport meant a cheap pod flying on cheap fuel and cheap drugs to knock you out. She had flickered into consciousness several times since launch, surfacing in confusion, falling back just as she'd gotten a grasp on things. The pod was dark, and there were no navigational screens. There was no way to tell how much time had passed between each waking, or how far she'd traveled, or if she'd even been traveling at all. The thought made her anxious and sick. Her vision cleared enough for her to focus on the window. The shutters were down, blocking out any possible light sources. She knew there were none. She was out in the open now. No bustling planets, no travel lanes, no sparkling orbiters, just emptiness, horrible emptiness, filled with nothing but herself and the occasional rock. The engine whined as it prepared for another sublayer jump. The drugs reached out, tugging her down into uneasy sleep. As she faded, she thought again of the job, the lies, the smug look on the official's face as she'd poured credits into his account. She wondered if it had been enough. It had to be. It had to. She'd paid too much already for mistakes she'd had no part in. Her eyes closed. The drugs took her. The pod, presumably, continued on. Day 129. GC Standard 306. A complaint. Living in space was anything but quiet. Grounders never expected that. For anyone who had grown up planetside, it took some time to get used to the clicks and hums of a ship, the ever-present ambience that came with living inside a piece of machinery. But to Ashby, those sounds were as ordinary as his own heartbeat. He could tell when it was time to wake by the sigh of the air filter over his bed. When rocks hit the outer hull with their familiar pattering, he knew which were small enough to ignore and which meant trouble. He could tell by the amount of static crackling over the Ansible how far away he was from the person on the other end. These were the sounds of spacer life, an underscore of vulnerability and distance. They were reminders of what a fragile thing it was to be alive. But those sounds also meant safety. An absence of sound meant that air was no longer flowing. Engines no longer running, artigrav nets no longer holding your feet to the floor. Silence belonged to the vacuum outside. Silence was death. There were other sounds, too, sounds made not by the ship itself, but by the people living in it. Even in the endless halls of homestead ships, you could hear the echoes of nearby conversations, footsteps on metal floors, the faint thumping of a tech climbing through the walls, off to repair some unseen circuit. Ashby's ship, the Wayfarer, was spacious enough, but tiny compared to the homesteader he'd grown up on. When he'd first purchased the Wayfarer and filled it with crew, even he'd had to get used to the close quarters they kept. But the constant sounds of people working and laughing and fighting all around him had become a comfort. The open was an empty place to be, and there were moments when even the most seasoned spacer might look to the star-flecked void outside with humility and awe. Ashby welcomed the noise. It was reassuring to know that he was never alone out there, especially given his line of work. Building wormholes was not a glamorous profession. The interspatial passageways that ran throughout the Galactic Commons were so ordinary as to be taken for granted. Ashby doubted the average person gave tunneling much more thought than you might give a pair of trousers or a hot-cooked meal. But his job required him to think about tunnels, and to think hard on them, at that. If you sat and thought about them for too long, imagined your ship diving in and out of space like a needle pulling thread, well, that was the sort of thing that made a person glad for some noisy company. Ashby was in his office, reading a news feed over a cup of mech, when one particular sound made him cringe. Footsteps. Corbin's footsteps. Corbin's angry footsteps, coming right toward his door. Ashby sighed, swallowed his irritation, and became the captain. He kept his face neutral, his ears open. Talking to Corbin always required a moment of preparation and a good deal of detachment. Artis Corbin was two things, a talented algaeist and a complete asshole. The former trait was crucial on a long-haul ship like the Wayfarer. A batch of fuel going brown could be the difference between arriving at port and going adrift. Half of one of the Wayfarer's lower decks was filled with nothing but algae vats, all of which needed someone to obsessively adjust their nutrient content and salinity. This was one area in which Corbin's lack of social graces was actually a benefit. The man preferred to stay cooped up in the algae bay all day, muttering over readouts, working in pursuit of what he called optimal conditions. Conditions always seemed optimal enough to Ashby, but he wasn't going to get in Corbin's way where algae was concerned. Ashby's fuel costs had dropped by 10% since he'd brought Corbin aboard, and there were few algaeists who would accept a position on a tunneling ship in the first place. Algae could be touchy enough on a short trip, but keeping your batches healthy over a long haul required meticulousness, and stamina, too. Corbin hated people, but he loved his work, and he was damn good at it. In Ashby's book, that made him extremely valuable. An extremely valuable headache. The door spun open and Corbin stormed in. His brow was beaded with sweat, as usual, and the graying hair at his temples looked slick. The Wayfarer had to be kept warm for their pilot's sake, but Corbin had voiced his dislike for the ship's standard temperature from day one. Even after years aboard the ship, his body had refused to acclimate, seemingly out of pure spite. Corbin's cheeks were red as well, though whether that was due to his mood or from coming up the stairs was anyone's guess. Ashby never got used to the sight of cheeks that red. The majority of living humans were descended from the Exodus fleet, which had sailed far beyond the reaches of their ancestral sun. Many, like Ashby, had been born within the very same homesteaders that had belonged to the original Earthen refugees. His tight black curls and amber skin were the result of generations of mingling and mixing aboard the giant ships. Most humans, whether space-born or colony kids, shared that nationless Exodon blend. Corbin, on the other hand, was unmistakably Sol System stock. Even though the people of the home planets had come to resemble Exodons in recent generations. With as much of a hodgepodge as human genetics were, lighter shades were known to pop up here and there, even in the fleet. But Corbin was practically pink. His forerunners had been scientists, early explorers who built the first research orbiters around Enceladus. They'd been there for centuries, keeping vigil over the bacteria flourishing within icy seas. With Sol a dim thumbprint in the skies above Saturn, the researchers lost more and more pigment with every decade. The end result was Corbin, a pink man bred for tedious lab work and a sunless sky. Corbin tossed his scrib over Ashby's desk. The thin, rectangular pad sailed through the mist-like pixel screen and clattered down in front of Ashby. Ashby gestured to the pixels, instructing them to disperse. The news headlines hovering in the air dissolved into colored wisps. The pixels slunk down like swarms of tiny insects into the projector boxes on either side of the desk. Ashby looked at the scrib and raised his eyebrows at Corbin.
"This,"
Corbin said, pointing a bony finger at the scrib,
"has got to be a joke."
"Let me guess," Ashby said.
"Jenks messed with your notes again." Corbin frowned and shook his head. Ashby focused on the scrib, trying not to laugh at the memory of the last time Jenks had hacked into Corbin's scrib, replacing the algist's careful notes with 362 photographic variations of Jenks himself, naked as the day he was born. Ashby had thought the one of Jenks carrying a Galactic Commons banner was particularly good. It had a sort of dramatic dignity to it, all things considered. Ashby picked up the scrib, flipping it screen side up. "Attention. Captain Ashby Santoso, Wayfarer GC Tunneling License number 387-97456. RE. Resume for Rosemary Harper, GC Administration Certificate number 65-78-2. Ashby recognized the file. It was the resume for their new clerk, who was scheduled to arrive the next day. She was probably strapped into a D-pod by now, sedated for the duration of her long, cramped trip.
"Why are you showing me this?" Ashby asked.
"Oh, so you have actually read it?" Corbin said.
"Of course I have. I told you all to read this file ages ago so you could get a feel for her before she arrived."
Ashby had no idea what Corbin was getting at, but this was Corbin's standard operating procedure. Complain first, explain later. Corbin's reply was predictable even before he opened his mouth.
"I didn't have the time."
Corbin had a habit of ignoring tasks that didn't originate within his lap.
"What the hell are you thinking, bringing aboard a kid like that?"
"I was thinking," Ashby said, "that I need a certified clerk."
Even Corbin couldn't argue that point.
Ashby's records were a mess, and while a tunneling ship didn't strictly need a clerk in order to keep its license, the suits at the GC Transportation Board had made it pretty clear that Ashby's perpetually late reports weren't earning him any favors. Feeding and paying an extra crew member was no small expense, but after careful consideration and some nudging from Sissix, Ashby had asked the board to send him someone certified. His business was going to start suffering if he didn't stop trying to do two jobs at once. Corbin folded his arms and sniffed.
"Have you talked to her?"
"We had a SIB chat last 10 day. She seems fine."
"She seems fine," Corbin repeated. "That's encouraging."
Ashby chose his next words more carefully. This was Corbin, after all, the king of semantics. "The board cleared her. She's fully qualified."
"The board is smoking smash."
He stabbed his finger toward the scrib again.
"She's got no long-haul experience. She's never lived off Mars, as far as I can tell. She's fresh out of university."
Ashby started ticking things off on his fingers. Two could play at this game. "She's certified to handle GC formwork. She's worked an internship at a ground transport company, which required the same basic skills I need her to have. She's fluent in Hanto, gestures and all, which could really open some doors for us. She comes with a letter of recommendation from her interspecies relations professor. And most important, from the little I've spoken to her, she seems like someone I can work with."
"She's never done this before. We're out in the middle of the open, on our way to a blind punch, and you're bringing a kid aboard."
"She's not a kid. She's just young. And everybody has a first job, Corbin. Even you must have started somewhere."
"You know what my first job was? Scrubbing out sample dishes in my father's lab. A trained animal could have done that job. That's what a first job should be, not—"
He sputtered.
"May I remind you what we do here? We fly around punching holes, very literal holes, through space. This is not a safe job. Kizzy and Jenks scare the hell out of me with their carelessness as it is, but at least they're experienced. I can't do my job if I'm constantly worried about some incompetent rookie pushing the wrong button."
That was the warning flag. The "I can't work under these conditions" flag that indicated Corbin was about to go non-linear. It was time to get him back on the rails.
"Corbin, she's not going to be pushing any buttons. She's not doing anything more complicated than writing reports and filing form work.
And liaising with border guards and planetary patrols and clients who are late on their payments. The people we have to work with are not all nice people. They are not all trustworthy people. We need someone who can hold their own. Who can bark down some upstart deputy who thinks he knows regulations better than us. Somebody who knows the difference between a real food safety stamp and a smuggler's knockoff. Somebody who actually knows how things work out here, not some blank-eyed graduate who will wet herself the first time a Quaylen enforcer pulls up alongside. Ashby set his mug down. "What I need," he said, "is someone to keep my records accurate. I need someone to manage our appointments, to make sure we all get the required vaccinations and scans before crossing borders, and to get my financial files sorted out. It's a complicated job, but not a difficult one. Not if she's as organized as her letter of recommendation makes her out to be." "That's a standardized letter if I ever saw one. I bet that professor has sent the exact same letter on behalf of every milquetoast student that came mewling through his door." Ashby arched an eyebrow. "She studied at Alexandria University. Same as you." Corbin scoffed. "I was in the science department. There's a difference." Ashby gave a short laugh. "Sissix is right, Corbin. You are a snob. Sissix can go to hell." "So I heard you telling her last night. I could hear you down the hall." Corbin and Sissix were going to kill each other one of these days. They had never gotten along, and neither of them had any interest in trying to find common ground. It was an area where Ashby had to tread very lightly. Ashby and Sissix had been friends before the Wayfarer, but when he was in captain mode, both she and Corbin had to be treated equally as members of his crew. Moderating their frequent sparring matches required a delicate approach. Most of the time, he tried to stay out of it altogether. "Should I even ask?" Corbin's mouth twitched. "She used the last of my dent bots." Ashby blinked. "You do know we've got huge cases of dent bot packs down in the cargo bay." "Not my dent bots." "You buy those cheap hack job bots that leave your gums sore." "I use those bots every day and my gums feel just fine." "I have sensitive gums. You can ask Dr. Chef for my dental records if you don't believe me. I have to buy my own bots." Ashby hoped that his face did not reveal just how low this tale of woe ranked on his list of priorities. "I appreciate that it's annoying, but it's just one pack of dent bots we're talking about here." Corbin was indignant. "They don't come cheap. She did it just to get at me. I know she did. If that selfish lizard can't—" "Hey!" Ashby sat up straight. "Not okay. I don't want to hear that word come out of your mouth again." As far as racial insults went, lizard was hardly the worst, but it was bad enough. Corbin pressed his lips together, as if to keep further unpleasantries from escaping. "Sorry." Ashby's hackles were up, but truthfully, this was an ideal way for a conversation with Corbin to go. Get him away from the crew, let him vent, wait for him to cross a line, then talk him down while he was feeling penitent. "I will talk to Sissix, but you have got to be more civil to people, and I don't care how mad you get, that kind of language does not belong on my ship." "I just lost my temper, was all." Corbin was obviously still angry, but even he knew better than to bite the hand that feeds. Corbin knew that he was a valuable asset, but at the end of the day, Ashby was the one who sent credits to his account. Valuable was not the same as irreplaceable. "Losing your temper is one thing, but you are a part of a multi-species crew, and you need to be mindful of that, especially with somebody new coming aboard. And on that note, I'm sorry you have concerns about her, but frankly, she's not your problem. Rosemary was the board's suggestion, but agreeing to take her on was my call. If she's a mistake, we'll get someone new. But until then, we are all going to give her the benefit of the doubt. Regardless of how you feel about her, I expect you to make her feel welcome here. In fact," a slow smile spread across Ashby's face. Corbin looked wary. "What?" Ashby leaned back in his chair, lacing his fingers together. "Corbin, I seem to recall that our new clerk will be arriving around 17:30 tomorrow.
Now, I have a sip scheduled with Yoshi at 17 on the nose, and you know how he loves to talk. I doubt I'll be done by the time Rosemary docks, and she's going to need someone to show her around.
Oh, no!
A stricken look crossed Corbin's face.
Have Kizzy do it. She loves that sort of thing.
Kizzy's got her hands full replacing the air filter by the med bay, and I doubt she'll be done before tomorrow. Jenks will be helping Kizzy, so he's out.
Sissix, then.
Sissix has a lot of prep work to do before the punch tomorrow. She probably won't have the time. Ashby grinned. I'm sure you'll give her a great tour.
Corbin looked at his employer with baleful eyes. Sometimes you're a real pain in the ass, Ashby.
Ashby picked up his mug and finished off the dregs. I knew I could count on you. Day 130. GC Standard 306. Arrival. Rosemary rubbed the bridge of her nose as she accepted a cup of water from the wall dispenser. The lingering edges of the sedatives made her head feel foggy, and so far, the stims that were supposed to counter those effects had done nothing but make her heart race. Her body longed for a stretch, but she couldn't undo the safety harness while the pod was in motion, and the pod didn't have enough room for anything except standing up and walking out anyway. She leaned her head back with a groan. It had been nearly 3 days since the D-pod launched. Solar days, she reminded herself, not standard days. She needed to get used to making the distinction. Longer days, longer years. She had more pressing things to focus on than differences in calendars. She was groggy, hungry, cramped, and in all her 23 years, solar, not standard, she could not remember ever needing to pee quite so badly. The brusque Aluon attendant at the spaceport had told her the sedatives would suppress that need, but nothing had been said about how she would feel once they wore off. Rosemary imagined the lengthy letter of complaint her mother might write after such a trip. She tried to imagine the circumstances in which her mother would travel by D-pod at all. She couldn't even picture her mother setting foot within a public spaceport. Rosemary had been surprised to find herself in such a place. The dingy waiting area, the twitching pixel posters, the stale smells of algae gunk and cleaning fluid. Despite the exoskeletons and tentacles milling around her, she had felt like the alien there. That was the thing that had hammered home just how far from Sol she was. The menagerie of sapients standing alongside her in the ticket line. Her home world was fairly cosmopolitan, but aside from the occasional diplomat or corporate representative, Mars didn't see much in the way of non-human travelers. A terraformed rock inhabited by one of the GC's least influential species was hardly a destination of choice. Professor Selim had warned her that studying the concepts behind interspecies relations was vastly different from having to go out there and talk to other sapients. But she hadn't truly understood that advice until she found herself surrounded by clunky biosuits and feet that didn't need shoes. She'd even been nervous speaking to the Harmagian behind the ticket counter. She knew that her Hanto was excellent, for a human anyway, but this was no longer the safe, controlled environment of the university language lab. No one would gently correct her mistakes or forgive her for an unwitting social transgression. She was on her own now, and in order to keep credits in her account and a bed beneath her back, she had to do the job she had assured Captain Santoso she could do. No pressure or anything. Not for the first time, a cold fist appeared deep within her stomach. Never in her life had she worried about credits or having a place to go home to. But with the last of her savings running thin and her bridges burned behind her, there was no margin for error. The price of a fresh start was having no one to fall back on. Please, she thought. Please don't screw this up. We are beginning our approach, Rosemary, chirped the D-pod's computer. Do you require anything else before I begin docking procedures?
A bathroom and a sandwich, said Rosemary.
Sorry, Rosemary, I had difficulty processing that. Could you please repeat your request? I don't require anything. Okay, Rosemary. I will now open the outer shutters. You may wish to close your eyes in order to adjust to any external light sources. Rosemary dutifully shut her eyes as the shutters whirred open, but her eyelids remained dark. She opened her eyes to find that the only significant source of light was coming from within the pod. As she had expected, there was nothing beyond the window but empty space and tiny stars, out in the open. She wondered how thick the pod's hull was. The pod swung up, and Rosemary shielded her eyes from a sudden burst of light, pouring out of the windows of the ugliest ship she'd ever seen. It was blocky and angular, with the exception of a bulging dome that stuck out from the back like a warped spine. This was not a ship designed for fussy commercial passengers. There was nothing sleek or inspiring about it. It was bigger than a transport ship, smaller than a cargo carrier. The lack of wings indicated that this was a ship that had been built out in space, a ship that would never enter an atmosphere. The underside of the vessel held a massive, complex machine, metallic and sharp, with rows of tooth-like ridges angled toward a thin, protracted spire. She didn't know much about ships, but from the mismatched colors of the outer hull, it looked as though whole sections had been cobbled together, perhaps originating from other vessels. A patchwork ship. The only reassuring thing about it was that it looked sturdy. This was a ship that could take, and had taken, a few knocks. Though the ships she was used to traveling in were far easier on the eye, knowing that there would be a solid, stocky hull between her and all that empty space was heartening. "Wayfarer, this is D-Pod 36-A requesting permission to dock," said the computer. "D-Pod 36-A, this is the Wayfarer," replied a female voice with an Exodan accent. Rosemary noted the softness of the vowels, the pronunciation that was a little too polished. An AI. "Please confirm passenger identification."
"Acknowledged, Wayfarer. Transmitting passenger details now."
There was a brief pause.
"Confirmed. D-Pod 36-A, you are cleared to dock."
The D-Pod moved alongside the Wayfarer like some sort of aquatic animal swimming up to suckle at its mother. The hatch at the back of the pod slipped into the Wayfarer's sunken docking port. Rosemary could hear the mechanical sounds of catches connecting. There was a hiss of air as the seal expanded. The hatch door slid upward. Rosemary moaned as she stood. Her muscles felt as if they would splinter. She collected her duffel bag and satchel from the luggage rack and limped forward. There was a slight gravitational discrepancy between the pod and the Wayfarer, enough to make her stomach lurch as she crossed the seam between the two. The feeling only lasted a few seconds, but combined with her foggy head, jittery pulse, and aching bladder, it was enough to make Rosemary cross the line from uncomfortable to vaguely miserable. She hoped her new bed was soft. She stepped into a small decontamination chamber, empty except for a glowing yellow panel affixed to a waist-high stand. The AI spoke through a vox on the wall.
"Hello! I'm pretty sure I know who you are, but can you swipe your wrist patch over the panel so I can be sure?"
Rosemary pulled her sleeve back, exposing her wrist wrap, a woven bracelet that protected the small dermal patch embedded within the skin of her inner right wrist. There was a lot of data stored in that thumbnail-sized piece of tech, her ID file, her bank account details, and a medical interface used to communicate with the 500,000 or so Immubots that patrolled her bloodstream. Like all GC citizens, Rosemary got her first patch during childhood. For humans, the standard age was 5. But the patch she had now was only a few 10 days old. The seam of skin surrounding it was still shiny and tender. The new patch had cost almost half of her savings, which seemed exorbitant, but she had hardly been in the position to argue. She held her wrist over the yellow panel. There was a soft pulse of light. A twinge of adrenaline ran alongside the stims. What if something had gone wrong with the patch and they pulled her old file instead? What if they saw her name and put two and two together? Would it matter to people out here? Would it matter that she'd done nothing wrong? Would they turn away from her, just as her friends had? Would they put her back on the pod and send her crawling back to Mars, back to a name she didn't want and a mess she hadn't? The pad blinked a friendly green. Rosemary exhaled and scoffed at herself for being nervous at all. The new patch had worked just fine ever since it was installed. She'd had no trouble confirming her identity or making payments at any stops along the way. It was unlikely that the patch scanner on this clunky tunneling ship would have picked up any discrepancies that the high-end scanners at the spaceports hadn't. Even so, this was the last hurdle to clear. Now all she had to worry about was whether or not she'd be good at her job.
"Well, there you are, Rosemary Harper," said the AI. "My name is Lovelace, and I serve as the ship's communication interface. I suppose in that regard we have relatively similar jobs, don't we? You liaise on behalf of the crew, I liaise on behalf of the ship."
"I guess that's true," Rosemary said, a little unsure of herself. She didn't have much experience with sentient AIs. The ones back home were all bland and utilitarian. The university library had an AI named Oracle, but she had been a more academic sort. Rosemary had never spoken to an AI as personable as Lovelace.
"Should I call you Rosemary?" Lovelace asked. "Or do you have a nickname?"
"Rosemary is fine."
"Okay, Rosemary. You can call me Lovey if you like. Everyone else does. Feels good to be off that pod, doesn't it?"
"You have no idea."
"True, but then you don't know how good it feels to have your memory banks recalibrated."
Rosemary considered this.
"You're right, I don't."
"Rosemary, I have to be honest with you. The reason I've kept you chatting for this long is that you don't get bored while I scan you for contaminants. One of our crew members has very specific health needs, and I have to do a more thorough scan than some ships require. It shouldn't be much longer."
Rosemary hadn't felt that she'd been waiting long at all, but she had no idea what qualified as a lengthy amount of time to an AI.
"Take all the time you need."
"Is that all the luggage you have?"
"Yes," Rosemary said. In fact, she was carrying everything that she owned. That is, everything she hadn't sold off. She was still marveling at the fact that she could fit it all into two little bags. After a life in her parents' enormous home, full of furniture and knick-knacks and rarities, the knowledge that she didn't need anything more than what she could carry gave her a remarkable sense of freedom.
"If you put your bags into that cargo elevator to your right, I can move them to the upper crew deck for you. You can pick them up whenever you head to your room."
"Thanks," Rosemary said. She pulled open the hinged metal door on the wall, set her bags into the corresponding compartment, and latched the door shut. There was a rushing sound within the wall.
"Okay, Rosemary, I just finished my scan. Hate to say it, but you do have a few blacklisted bugs in your system."
"What kind of bugs?" Rosemary asked. She thought back with dread to the spaceport's smudged handrails and sticky seats. 3 10 days since she'd left Mars, and already she'd picked up some alien plague.
"Oh, nothing that would affect you, but they are things our navigator can't handle. You'll need to have our doctor update your immunobots accordingly before you leave the ship again. For now, I'm going to have to give you a decontamination flash. Is that okay?"
Lovey sounded apologetic, and for good reason. The only good thing about a decontamination flash was that it was over quickly.
"Okay," Rosemary said, gritting her teeth. "Hang in there," Lovey said. "Flashing in 3, 2, 1.
Harsh orange light filled the room. Rosemary could feel it move right through her. A cold sting cut through her pores, her teeth, the roots of her eyelashes. For a brief moment, she knew where all her capillaries were.
"Oh, I'm so sorry," Lovey said as the flash ended. "I hate having to do that. You look sick."
Rosemary exhaled, trying to shake off the needle-like twinges. "It's not your fault," she said. "I wasn't feeling very well to start." She paused, realizing that she was trying to make an AI feel better. It was a silly concept, but something about Lovey's demeanor made any other response feel a bit rude. Could AIs even take offense? Rosemary wasn't sure.
I hope you feel better soon. I know there's dinner planned for you, but I'm sure you can get some rest right after that. Now I've kept you long enough. You're free to go on through. And may I be the first to say, welcome aboard.
The Vox switched off. Rosemary pressed her hand against the door panel. The inner airlock door spun open to reveal a pale man with a sour face. He changed his expression as Rosemary stepped forward. It was the most insincere smile she had ever seen.
Welcome to the Wayfarer, the man said, extending his hand. Artis Corbin, Algist.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Corbin. I'm Rosemary Harper.
Rosemary shook his hand. His grip was limp, his skin clammy. She was glad to let go.
Just Corbin is fine. He cleared his throat.
He nodded toward the opposite wall. There was a door painted with the human symbol for bathroom. Rosemary ran for it. She came back out a few minutes later in a more positive mood. Her heart was still fluttering, her head still clearing, the lingering tingle of the flash still making her teeth hurt. But at least one of her physical complaints could be checked off the list.
D-pods are the worst way to travel, Corbin said. They run on scrub fuel, you know, bunch of accidents waiting to happen. They really should be better regulated.
Rosemary tried to think up a response, but before she could, Corbin said,
this way.
She followed him down the corridor. The Wayfarer wasn't any fancier inside than it was outside, but the mismatched corridors had a humble charm. Small windows broke up the walls at regular intervals. The wall panels themselves were held together with bolts and screws of varying shapes. Like the exterior, the walls were different colors, coppery brown to one side, dull brass to the other, the occasional sheet of soft gray thrown in for good measure.
Interesting design, said Rosemary.
Corbin scoffed.
If by interesting you mean it looks like my grandmother's quilt, then yes. The Wayfarer's an old ship. Most tunneling ships are. Incentives are provided to captains who upgrade old vessels instead of purchasing new ones. Ashby took full advantage of that. The original ship is about 35 standards old, built to last, but not built with the comfort of the crew in mind. Ashby added bigger quarters, more storage space, water showers, those kinds of things. All salvaged, of course. Don't have the money to kit it all out from scratch.
Rosemary was relieved at the mention of improved living conditions. She had been bracing herself for the possibility of tiny bunks and sanitized showers. I assume that Lovey was a later addition as well?
Yes. Ashby purchased her, but she's Jenks's pet.
Corbin continued on without explanation. He nodded at the wall.
There are Voxes in every room and in major junctions. No matter where you are, Lovey can hear your requests and transmit messages on your behalf. They broadcast to the whole ship, so be selective about what you say. Voxes are a tool, not a toy. Fire extinguishers are available throughout the ship as well. Kizzy can send you a map of their locations. Exosuit lockers are in the docking hatch, the crew deck, and the cargo bay. Escape pods are available on all decks. We also have a shuttle that is accessible through the cargo bay. If you see those emergency panels on the wall light up, head for a suit, a pod or the shuttle, whichever is closest.
The corridor split in two up ahead. He pointed to the left.
Med bay is that way. It's nothing state-of-the-art, but it's enough to keep someone alive until we get to port.
I see, said Rosemary.
She tried not to read too much into the fact that the only things Corbin had mentioned were related to emergencies or injuries. Loud, jovial voices came from a junction up ahead. There was a clang as something fell to the floor. This was followed by a brief argument, then laughter.
Corbin's eyes narrowed as if warding off a headache. I believe you're about to meet our techs, he said.
They rounded the corner to find a bird's nest of wires and cables strewn about the floor. There was no order or sense to any of it, not that Rosemary could see. Algae tubes poured like innards from an open wall panel. Working within the wall itself were two people, A man and a woman, both human. Or were they? There was no question about the woman, who was somewhere on the cusp between her 20s and 30s. Her black hair was tied back in a lopsided bun, held together with a frayed, faded ribbon. She wore an orange jumpsuit smudged with grease and gunk, patched on the elbows with bright fabric and big stitches. There were hasty notes handwritten on her sleeves, things like, "Check 32-B, old wires?" and, "Don't forget air filters, you dummy," and, "Eat." Perched on her flat nose was a set of curious optical lenses. Rather than just one lens per eye, there were no fewer than half a dozen attachments welded onto hinge supports. Some bulged and magnified, others flickered with tiny digital panels. They appeared to be handmade. As for the woman herself, her dark olive skin looked as if it had spent a lot of time bathing in natural sunlight, but her indistinct features were undeniably Exodan. Rosemary thought it likely that she had grown up on an extrasolar colony, out of the sun, as they would say back on Mars. The man, on the other hand, was not so easily categorized, though he looked human in most respects. His blended facial features, his body shape, his limbs and digits, they were all familiar. His copper coloring was even quite similar to Rosemary's, though several shades darker. But while his head was an average size, the rest of him was small as a child. He was stocky, too, as if his limbs had filled out while refusing to lengthen. He was small enough to fit atop the woman's shoulders, which was exactly where he was standing. As if his physique were not noteworthy enough, he had gone to great lengths to decorate himself. The sides of his head were shaved, and a tuft of curls popped up atop his scalp. His ears were adorned with constellations of piercings, his arms sleeved in colorful tattoos. Rosemary did her best not to stare. She concluded that he was indeed human, but he had to be a gene tweak. It was the only explanation she could think of. But then again, why would anyone go to that much trouble to make himself small? The woman looked up from her work.
"Oh, hooray!" she said. "Jinx, get off of me. We have to be sociable."
The small man, who had been operating some noisy tool within the wall, turned his head and lifted up his safety goggles.
"Aha!" he said, climbing down. "The newbie approaches."
Before Rosemary could have any say in the matter, the woman stood up, removed her gloves, and wrapped Rosemary in an enormous hug.
"Welcome home,"
she pulled back, wearing an infectious grin.
"I'm Kizzy Shao, mech tech."
"Rosemary Harper," she tried not to appear too startled, "and thank you." Kizzy's grin grew wider.
"Oh, I love your accent. You Martians always sound so smooth."
"I'm the comp tech," the man said, cleaning the gunk from his hands with a rag. "Jenks."
"Is that your given name or your family name?" Rosemary asked. Jenks shrugged.
"Whichever."
He reached out to shake her hand. Even with his small hands, he had a better grip than Corbin.
"Nice to meet you."
"Nice to meet you too, Mr. Jenks."
"Mr. Jenks! I like that."
He turned his head.
"Hey, Lovey, patch me through to everybody, please."
A nearby vox switched on.
"Attention, all hands," Jenks said in a pompous voice. "As per our clerk's example, I will now only respond to my full title of Mr. Jenks. That is all."
Corbin leaned toward Rosemary and lowered his voice. "That's not what the voxes are for."
"So," said Kizzy, "was your trip okay?"
"I've had better," said Rosemary. "Though I'm here in one piece, so I guess I can't complain."
"Complain all you want," Jenks said.
He pulled a worn metal tin from his pocket.
"D-pods are a shit way to get around, and I know they're the only way to get you here fast, but those things are dangerous as hell. Stims make you shaky?"
Rosemary nodded.
"Ugh, yeah, trust me, you'll feel better after you get some food in you." "Have you been up to your room yet?" Kizzy asked. "I made the curtains, but if you don't like the fabric, just say so, and I'll tear 'em right down."
I haven't been there yet, Rosemary said. But I've been admiring the rest of your handiwork so far. Must not be easy adding on to an old model.
Kizzy's face lit up like a glow bulb.
No, but see, that's why it's so fun. It's like a puzzle, figuring out what kind of circuits the old ones will talk to, adding new bits to make things more homey, staying on top of all the old framework's secrets so we don't blow up.
She gave a contented sigh.
It's the best job ever. Have you seen the fishbowl yet?
The what? Sorry.
The fishbowl, Kizzy beamed. Just wait, it's the bestest.
Corbin's peering eyes snapped to the comp tech.
Jenks, you cannot be serious.
Jenks's metal tin was full of red reed. He had stuffed a hefty pinch of it into a small, curved pipe and was now lighting it with a welding tool.
What?
He said, his voice muffled through clenched teeth. He sucked air into the pipe, causing the shredded fibers to spark and smoke. The faint scent of burnt cinnamon and ash hit Rosemary's nose. She thought of her father, who was always puffing the stuff as he worked. She pushed the unwanted reminder of family aside. Corbin placed a hand over his nose and mouth.
If you want to fill your lungs with toxins, fine, but do it in your quarters.
Calm down, said Jenks. This is that tweaked strain the LaRue cooked up. Bless their 8 Val tarts. All the mellow of fresh red reed without any of the toxic stuff. 100% good for you. Well, not bad for you, anyway. You should try some. It'd do wonders for your mood.
He exhaled a stream of smoke into Corbin's direction. Corbin's face tightened, but he seemed reluctant to press the issue further. Rosemary got the impression that for all his bluster about the rules, Corbin didn't actually have any authority over the techs.
Does Ashby know about this mess?
Corbin said, gesturing at the floor.
Relax, Grumpy, Kizzy said. It'll all be fixed and put away by dinner time.
Dinner is in half an hour, Corbin said.
Kizzy's hands went to the top of her head. She grimaced dramatically.
Oh, no, for serious? I thought dinner was at 18.
It's 17 half now.
Balls, Kizzy said, diving back into the wall. We'll talk later, Rosemary. I've got work to do. Jenks, get on my shoulders, buddy. Post haste.
Huh?
Jenks said, placing the pipe between his teeth and climbing up. Corbin continued down the corridor without another word.
It was nice meeting you, Rosemary said, hurrying after Corbin. Nice meeting you, too, called Kizzy. Ah, shit, Jenks! You got ash in my mouth!
There was the sound of spitting and a twin set of laughter.
It's a wonder we're not all dead, Corbin said to no one.
He said nothing else as they continued down the corridor. Rosemary had deduced that small talk was not his forte. As uncomfortable as the silence was, she felt it best not to break it. The corridor curved inward, connecting to the other side of the ship. At the apex of the curve was a door.
This is the control room, Corbin said. Navigation and tunneling controls. You won't have much need for this room.
Is it all right to see it anyway, just to get my bearings?
Corbin hesitated.
Our pilot is probably working in there now. We shouldn't disturb.
The door opened, and a female Andrisk stepped out.
I thought I heard a new voice, she said.
Her accent was husky around the edges, but it was the clearest Rosemary had ever heard from her species. Not that Rosemary had much experience with Andrisks. As one of the Galactic Commons' 3 founding species, they were a familiar sight throughout the galaxy, or so Rosemary had been told. The Andrisk standing before her was the first that she had ever spoken to directly. Her mind raced, scrambling to remember what she could of Andrisk culture. Complicated family structures, virtually no concept of personal space, physically affectionate, promiscuous. She mentally slapped herself for that. It was a stereotype, one that every human knew whether they wanted to or not, and it smacked of ethnocentrism. They don't pair up like we do, she chided herself. It's not the same thing. Somewhere in her head, Professor Selim was frowning at her. The very fact that we use the term cold-blooded as a synonym for heartless should tell you something about the innate bias we primates hold against reptiles.
she pictured him saying. Do not judge other species by your own social norms.
Determined to do her professor proud, Rosemary braced herself for some of that Andrisk cheek nuzzling she'd heard about, or perhaps another unexpected hug. However this person wanted to greet her, she was going to flow with it. She was part of a multi-species crew now, and she was going to be graceful about it, damn it. But to Rosemary's disappointment, all the Andrisk woman did was extend one of her clawed hands, initiating a handshake.
You must be Rosemary, she said warmly. I'm Sissix.
Rosemary wrapped her fingers around Sissix's scaled palm as best she could. Their hands did not fit well together, but they made the best of it. Sissix was too alien for Rosemary to label her as beautiful, but striking. Yes, that was a better word. She stood a head taller than Rosemary, and her body was lithe and lean. Moss-green scales sheathed her body from the top of her head to the tip of her tail, fading into a paler shade over her belly. She had a smooth face, no nose or lips or ears to speak of, just holes for breathing and holes for hearing, and a small slit of a mouth. A multicolored shock of feathers covered her head like a short, festive mane. Her chest was as flat as a human man's, but the contrast between her thin waist and her muscular saurian thighs gave the illusion of feminine hips, though Rosemary knew that impression also stemmed from cultural bias. Male Andrisks were built exactly the same as females, only smaller. Her legs were slightly bowed, as if poised to spring, and her fingers and toes were capped with thick, blunt claws. Each claw was painted with lazy swirls of gold and looked to be filed down. She wore a pair of loose, low-slung trousers and a vest held together with one button. Rosemary recalled Professor Selim saying that Andrisks only wore clothes to make other species feel more comfortable. Between the clothes, the accent, and the handshake, Rosemary got the impression that Sissix had been around humans a long time. Sissix had not been the only thing to exit the control room. A waft of hot, dry air had followed her out the door. Rosemary could feel waves of heat emanating from the room beyond. Even at the doorway, it felt smothering. Corbin's eyes narrowed.
You do know that interface panels start to warp if they get too hot.
Sissix flicked her yellow eyes toward the pale man.
Thank you, Corbin. I've only been living on ships for my entire adult life, so I have no idea how to safely manage internal temperature settings.
I think this ship is hot enough as it is.
If anyone else had been working in there with me, I would have cranked it down. Honestly, what is the problem?
The problem, Sissix, is that...
Stop.
Sissix raised a palm. She looked back and forth between Corbin and Rosemary.
Why are you showing her around?
Corbin clenched his jaw.
Ashby asked me to. It's no trouble.
His words were noncommittal, but Rosemary could hear the same insincerity that had masked his face when she stepped through the airlock. The cold fist reappeared in her stomach. 10 minutes on the ship, and already somebody didn't like her. Fantastic.
Right, Sissix said. She squinted, as if trying to figure something out. I'd be happy to take over as tour guide if you have other things to do.
Corbin pressed his lips together.
I don't mean to be rude, Rosemary, but I do have some salinity tests that should be started sooner rather than later.
Great, said Sissix, putting her hand on Rosemary's shoulder. Have fun with your algae.
It was nice meeting you, Rosemary said as Sissix led her away. Corbin was already disappearing down the corridor. The whole exchange had been bewildering, but Rosemary was glad of what appeared to be more friendly company. She did her best not to stare at the way Sissix's bare feet flexed, the way her feathers bounced as she walked. Everything about the way she moved was fascinating.
Rosemary, on behalf of the crew of the Wayfarer, I would like to apologize, Sissix said. Coming into a new home deserves a better welcome than anything artist Corbin can give. I'm sure you know all about the escape pods by now, and nothing about who we are and what we do.
Rosemary laughed despite herself. How did you know?
Because I have to live with that man, Sissix said, as do you. But fortunately, you get to live with the rest of us, too, and I think we're pretty likable.
She stopped beside a metal staircase that stretched both up through the ceiling and down through the floor.
Have you even seen your room yet?
No.
Sissix rolled her eyes. Come on, she said, walking up the stairs, doing her best to keep her tail out of Rosemary's face. I always feel better on a new ship once I know where my place is.
The Andrisk woman was right. Rosemary's place, it turned out, was a room tucked into the corner of the topmost deck. The only furniture was a boxy apparatus built right into the far wall, which housed drawers, a tiny closet, and a nook just big enough for a bunk. But the sparseness of the room had been softened by a few human touches, or sapient touches, Rosemary supposed. The bunk was covered with a fuzzy blanket and a heap of colorful pillows, transforming what might have been a Spartan shelf into a cozy little nest. The curtains that Kizzy had mentioned were made from a flower-patterned fabric. No, not flowers. Jellyfish. The print was a bit too busy for Rosemary's taste, but she was sure it would grow on her. On the adjoining wall, there was a small hydroponic planter trailing tear-shaped leaves. Beside it was a mirror, upon which hung a printed note, "Welcome home." It was the smallest, simplest, humblest living space Rosemary had ever seen, dingy spaceport hotels notwithstanding. And yet, all things considered, it was perfect. She couldn't think of a better place to start over. Day 130, GC Standard 306. Tip-off. Ashby forced a smile as Yoshi rambled on over the sib. He had never liked the man much. There was nothing wrong with him, exactly, but stars, he could talk for days. Checking in with the transport board was an empty formality to begin with, a verbal confirmation that Ashby wouldn't be punching through any space that didn't belong to him. He, of all people, understood the need to measure twice and cut once, but Yoshi always managed to turn what should have been a simple matter of, did you get the flight plan, all right then, safe journey, into an hour-long conversation. The pixels displaying Yoshi flickered slightly, the result of signal decay. He pushed back his long sleeves and stirred his mech. Cold, Ashby noted, in the Harmagian style. He refrained from rolling his eyes at the well-crafted charade. The cold mech. The Aeluan-influenced tailoring. The practiced central accent that still betrayed a Martian cadence if you knew what to listen for. The trappings of a bureaucrat trying to pretend he had the same clout as the powerful species around him. Ashby was not ashamed of his heritage, quite the opposite. But there was something irritating about seeing a human get too big for his britches.
But enough about me, Yoshi said with a laugh. How's life aboard the Wayfarer? All well with your crew?
Yeah, we're all fine, Ashby said. And we've got one more, as of today.
Yes, yes, the new clerk. I was going to ask you about her. She's settling in all right?
I haven't actually met her yet. I heard her pod doc a short while ago.
Ah, then I won't keep you long.
Ha.
You know, Ashby, bringing on a clerk puts a few points in your book as far as the board's concerned. You've always been dependable when it comes to tunneling, but this shows that you're committed to upholding our administrative standards as well. Smart move on your part.
Just practical, really. I need the extra help.
Yoshi leaned back in his chair, his face blurring as he moved back from the SIB camera.
You've been doing level 3 work for a long time now. Have you ever considered taking things up a notch?
Ashby raised his eyebrows. Yoshi was a faker, but he wasn't incompetent. He knew the Wayfarer wasn't equipped for high-level jobs.
Sure, but we're not kitted out for it, Ashby said. He couldn't afford to be either.
His ship was geared for single-ship transport lanes, colony hops mostly. There was a lot of money to be made in cargo convoy tunnels, but you needed some serious equipment to make a stable passage that big. Ashby didn't know of any human-owned ships doing that kind of work.
True, but that doesn't mean you should limit yourself either, Yoshi said.
He glanced over his shoulder with sly importance. Again,
Ashby stopped himself from rolling his eyes. As far as he could tell, Yoshi was alone in a closed room.
Just watch out for some interesting work coming down the line, in your usual bracket, but, a little different.
Ashby leaned forward a bit. It was hard to trust much coming from a human who forced his R's into Hermogian burr, but even so, he wasn't going to ignore advice given from someone sitting in a parliament office. What kind of work?
I'm not in a position to say what, exactly,
Yoshi said. Let's just say it'd be a nice change of pace from what you're used to. He looked Ashby in the eye. The pixels twitched. The kind of thing that might give you a leg up. Ashby gave what he hoped was a congenial smile. That's a little vague. Yoshi smirked.
You follow the news?
Every day.
Make sure you do over, say, the next 5 days or so.
Don't worry about it now. Take care of your clerk. Get through the punch tomorrow, and then you'll see. He took a smug, knowing sip from his chilled cup. Trust me, you'll know it when you see it.